How are you doing? Friday, 5 p.m. I really hope that you are staying calm, cool. Keyword.
That's emphasis on cool.
Keyword there. Staying chilled.
And collected.
I know it's crazy outside. I just saw more first responder action in five different situations in the past hour from where I was to here. Imagine that. Five different situations requiring emergency response on the roads. So take it easy. Try to relax. You're going to be in some traffic. Hang out. Listen to some music with us. We'll just talk about...
Relax. Don't do it.
Right. We'll just talk about what we're doing, and we'll have some fun and play some good music. All right. Well, as you know, we've been covering The Who for a very long time now, and this is really the beginning of the end. This is part 42, if you could imagine that, in our series dedicated to The Who. That means we've done 41 hours on this band. It's pretty remarkable. They warrant it.
You could listen to it for 2 days straight and still have a little bit of a bathroom break.
Right. There you go. If you go to the internet and look up AmericanNetwork.com and look up our Who series, it's all there. So there you go. With 7 hours of bathroom breaks, like Heidi said. Go
right,
outside.
Take a nap.
Relax a bit. Yeah. Now, The Who must hold a world record for announcing their dissolution and then their subsequent reformation. I think they broke up more than any other band in the history of the universe. Now, on the one hand, it seemed like the band was anxious to part and get on with their separate lives, but then they seemed equally desperate to reform and cash in on the value of their name. And you know, not that I can blame them. I mean, this show captures the era after the band's first official breakup. We'll hear some solo music from Roger Daltrey, a lot of crazy stuff from Pete Townsend, as his career was careening in so many different directions that it was even hard to see what he was up to. John Entwistle remained very quiet for a long while after The Who broke up. But reading mostly today from Pete Townsend's autobiography, Who I Am, we'll start there. A few days before my 38th birthday in May 1983, I went to see Roger at his lovely Tudor house in Sussex. Driving there, I thought back to 1962, the very beginning of the band, when I had walked with my guitar to Roger's doorstep. I remember his girlfriend staggering towards me and his nonchalance at her ultimatum. Sod her, come in. I thought of how badly I had wanted in back then and how much I wanted out now. This time I confirmed what Roger already guessed. I would not go on tour with The Who anymore. Back in 1962, I half expected Roger to break down in tears that he had been deprived of that angry teenage blonde goddess. But he didn't then, and he didn't now. I said I would consider working on special projects with him. Charity shows, musicals, anything but rock tours. He seemed receptive. It seemed to have ended as quickly as it had begun. I expect the same thought occurred to Roger. In my notebook, I wrote, I proceed to freedom. One of the first things that happened around this point in time was Pete put out a compilation album called Scoop. It was a double album of rarities, demos, outtakes, that sort of thing. Had a lot of cool stuff on it. We used a lot of the tracks from Scoop in our earlier shows when we were playing some demos from tracks. That's where I obtained some of them. Here's one that I skipped, though, which... kind of relevant to the time, and one of my favorites from the album Scoop. It's called Dirty Water by Pete Townsend on 90.3 WHPC.
We'll be right back.
shows you. I wonder how many other tracks Pete had like hidden under the floorboards at Eel Pie Studios. Now, that's a good track. Like I said, it's a double album. I don't know if it's on a single CD. I don't even know if it's still in print. I bought the vinyl version back in the day because at this point in time, I was a total Townsend fanatic. I didn't care that The Who broke up because Townsend's past two solo albums were so awesome for me. Empty Glass and Chinese Eyes were pretty much defining what I wanted music to be in the early 80s. Oh, again, going back to Pete's autobiography, he says, the other three members of The Who had buried whatever resentments or problem they might have had with me or with each other, indeed with anyone at all, and were now looking to find some way to carry on with the band, to continue, in my mind, on some kind of nostalgic sideshow. A meeting at Bill Kerbersley's offices, that's their manager, on June 15, with all the band members, I stood by my decision to leave. Bill seemed to be the only one who could see I wasn't going to change my mind. At the very end of the meeting, Bill's wife, Jackie, turned to me. Perhaps you are finished, she said, not unkindly. She had worked hard and would continue doing so for some time to try to support my work as a solo artist. This meeting was the last that The Who would have for a very long time. It wasn't soon afterward that Roger Daltrey put out his solo album, which rather, I have to think that this was partly an indirect reference to his situation with the band breaking up. The album was called Parting Should Be Painless. Here's the title track on 90.3 WHPC. Roger seemed to be making a bit of a side statement about the status of the band and their breaking up with his, but I think it was his fifth solo album called Parting Should Be Painless, which it wasn't, again, from Pete. I spent October winding down some of The Who's business interests. Roger Searle, Mick Double, and Alan Smith of ML Executives, formed by our road crew after the Tommy movie windfall, wanted to take over the company, and we needed to establish a fair value. It was extremely difficult. It turned out that not only did we have to find a way to give this company and all of its assets to our road crew, we also had to sack them and pay them a severance. The final closure was a sobering moment. The Who had the finest crew in the world. As solo artists, we had discovered that no longer could we have an idea in the morning and see it executed by the afternoon. It's definitely true. Speaking of which, a listener from Hicksville called, Bob, I'm sorry, Bob, if that's your name, I forget now. But anyway, he was kind enough to point out that Al Rogan, one of those members of the crew who was so important to Pete Townsend, had just passed away. I believe it was just today or yesterday. What a shame. Al Rogan, he was the guy that was responsible for putting Pete Townsend's guitar together with sticky tape and glue and keep allowing the show to go on after Pete smashed them to bits. Anyway, continuing. Melvin Bragg commissioned a South Bank show about me while Nigel Wattis directed. Shooting began in May while I was recording music tracks at the Boathouse for a new solo album. Suddenly, I realized that my life hadn't changed as much as I thought. Nigel wanted to capture on film a piece of everything I was doing at the time. I was to be presented as a kind of Renaissance man, but it made me aware that things were veering out of control. I was recording music for a new solo album, working as a book editor with several distinguished titles in development, launching a new charity, working to spring Nelson Mandela from prison, chairing the most important women's refuge in the world, publishing my own first book, looking for a new home, making my first film, and trying, but failing, to write songs for Roger Daltrey. This time I wasn't drinking or abusing any other substance. I was using my first drug of choice, overwork. A few days later, The Who reunited for a one-off event. We were on the same stage for Live Aid, their first, well, we're not really broken up event. I did it for Bob Geldof, the charity's charismatic creator whom I adored and still do. But at one point when Bob sensed that I might refuse to appear, he took the gloves off. If The Who appear, we know we will get an additional £1 million of revenue, he said forcefully. Every pound we make will save a life. Do the math and do the show. Except he put in some interesting adjectives in there. At the end, as he battled to find a place to stand on the stage, it was I who moved to lift Bob Geldof up to join us for the finale, and it was Paul McCartney who moved to my side to help. That was a good moment for me. As for our performance, The Who were out of practice and should probably have left it to Queen and George Michael, who stole the show. Anyway, The Who did put out a live album. It was called Who's Last, double album, and it was a bit of a sorry document. It was just sort of listless. It's not that it was bad. It's just that it didn't have the spark of life. It sounded like a dead band making their last statement. I'm going to play one track from that album because it's a rather unusual take on a classic song that you probably know. It's from the album Who's Last. Here is Long Live Rock.
Yeah. he's dead. Rocky's dead. Rocky's dead.
Listen to critics and what they have to say about reviews sometimes, you'd be really misled. You would think that this album, Who's Last, was one of the most anemic live albums ever made. They make it sound like it was almost bloodless. In fact, the words that I'm reading right here from a review is so lifeless and lackluster that it's hard to believe the same band released this and Live at Leeds. It is hard to imagine a better testament as to why it was time for the band to come to an end. That's cruel. And like I said, they might sound like they are maybe going, it's a bit paint by numbers, what's happening on that album, but it's not lifeless. I mean, how can the Who ever sound lifeless? It's just, I don't think it's possible. Now, when I was reading from Pete's autobiography earlier, he had mentioned that he was trying to write songs for Roger and not having very much success. But for Roger's next solo album, the sixth album, which was released in September of 1985, we're getting to move a little fast here now, he was able to write one track, which ended up being the lead-off song of that album. And I think it was the first time that Pete had a song that he could give away to Roger for one of his albums. The song is called After the Fire, from the album Under a Raging Moon.
Still burns.
Man, it's sometimes hard for me to even have a conception of time. Now, this album came out in 1985, right? And on it, that album marks the very first time that Zach Starkey would play drums with any member of The Who. It was one of the first recordings that he ever had worked on in 1985. And of course, now he's still playing with The Who to this day. And you think of Zach as being, the kid, right? Which makes sense. Now, if he was 20 in 1985, that means, 95, 05, 15, that's 34 years ago. That means that Zach's 54 now. You still think of him as the kid? It's crazy.
It's so hard, like the Hackberry Ramblers.
So hard to keep a handle on this. Yeah, they're 90s, 110 years old, and
right,
they're making music,
the kid's
right?
60.
Yeah, right? All right, so let's see. Back to Pete's project. Pete was working on it. Well, here's what he says about it. A few months earlier, Eric Clapton and I attended a screening of Prince's film, Purple Rain. I was inspired by the way Prince had folded autobiographical references so elegantly into his film. I decided to create a film of my own, combining street scenes from a London district north of Shepherd's Bush and music sequences. Walter Donahue, an editor at Faber working on the film list, recommended that we also screen a film called Strikebound, directed by a young Australian called Richard Lowenstein, who I would eventually approach to direct my next project, White City. So this is Pete once again doing exactly what he loves to do. He needs the theme. He needs to have the big project to work on. So he's got a film. He's got an idea. He's calling it White City, which is really a place where a lot of immigrants live in Great Britain, in White City. It's like basically a housing project for immigrants. And Pete used that as the basis for his film, which I don't even know if that's possible to find these days. I guess you could if you looked hard enough. I found the album to be superior to the film. Pete's previous two solo albums were, like I said, fantastic. I don't think you could get much better than what he did on Empty Glass. Chinese Eyes was pretty close. And this album was maybe not up to snuff. I wouldn't say it was as consistent, but still a lot of great music on the album for White City. So let's start with the opening track from the album White City, Pete Townsend with Give Blood on 90.3 WHBC. Thank you.
to fill it in with fire.
The brilliant blues
just
an
like
album
that
seems to have like faded into the woodwork to some extent. Pete Townsend's solo record, White City, from the mid-80s. I found it to be like a... I thought that he was continuing along the same path as he did with his earlier solo albums, and I just thought that this was like a very promising career that he had going forward as a solo artist. To be quite frank, it didn't last. After this album, things began to get kind of weird with him. We'll cover some of that next week as we're able to go faster and faster as we move toward the future to wrap up the Who series. But we can linger on this album a bit longer simply because there's a great number of really good songs on it, including this, which is definitely one of my favorites from the album. A simple song about getting away called Hiding Out on 90.3.
Leading home.
you have it, from the album White City, which, yeah, I say it's the album. The thing is, it's odd because Pete really considered the whole project mostly to be a movie, and the album was like an accompaniment to the movie, really basically a soundtrack, but I don't think fans heard it that way. I don't think the film got seen by very many people. I saw it at one point back then, and I don't remember it very well. I remember finding it a bit confusing and scattered in the way that it was presented. It wasn't a very captivating film, while the album, I thought, was great. I mean, as Pete says in his own book, as a collection of songs, the White City album, which, as in his own words, he says, which accompanied the film, was almost entirely free and clear to be enjoyed as just that, which I agree. I mean, the songs work without any need for the film accompaniment. The closest that it comes to having some sort of direct reference is on this next track, which is the last we'll play from the album. It's called White City Fighting on 90.3 WHPC.
We'll be right back.
Yeah, I think that about sums up Pete's album, White City, rather nicely. A really excellent solo album that I'm really glad we had a chance to basically spend some time on it. Of course, we'll continue with Pete's move into the Deep End band that he got into next week. A couple more Scoop releases, then his Odd albums, and of course the Who reunion again, and then their dissolution again. Maybe even another reunion and another dissolution all in the same show. We'll see how far we can get next week. But I want to leave you with this track today, since we played the song that Pete wrote for Roger and gave to him for his solo album. It's interesting that Pete would come back and revisit it with the Deep End band and record his own version of it. So since we played the Roger's version earlier, I think it might make sense to balance things out and play Pete's live version of that song that he had written for Roger called After the Fire. This time, as I said, performed by Pete with the Deep End band. Hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you're staying cool and relaxed. I hope you helped, did something to help you get through this hour with a little bit of, just out of what's mental calmness. Stay cool, everybody. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
After the fire still burns. The heart grows older, but never ever learns. The memory is smolder, the soul always yearns. After the fire, the fire still Brixton gun and the scream of a child. The night is up, nothing's gonna stop this gang running wild. After the fire still burns. The heart grows older, but never ever learns. The memory is smolder, the soul always yearns. The fire still burns.
Thank you. I'd like to dedicate that song to a great band, the Faith Brothers. And a great new band, their new record's wonderful. And they did this concert, like everybody else, as a gift. I think they're terrific.